Reveal is brought to you by Progressive. Have you tried the Name Your Price tool yet? It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to find a rate that works for you. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive. Get your quote today at Progressive.com and see why 4 out of 5 new auto customers recommend Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Michael Montgomery, one of the producers on the show. I'm sitting in for Al Letson, who's working on a big project you'll be hearing more about. We're going to start this week's show with something a little different, a science lesson about the gas methane. When you turn on your gas stove, you're burning methane, the main ingredient in natural gas. It comes from hundreds of thousands of wells around the country, but a lot of it, millions of tons of methane, never reaches your stove or furnace because it leaks into the air. That could be from a worn-out valve, an aging pipeline, or storage tank. Some companies just vent methane into the air because it's mixed in with the stuff they're really after, crude oil. Once methane's released, the wind carries it whichever way it's blowing, and eventually it spreads through the atmosphere. Methane's a greenhouse gas. That means it traps heat almost like a blanket, causing the Earth's temperature to rise. Climate change. And there's more and more of these gases piling on all the time. Up until now, most of the plans to curb greenhouse gases have centered on carbon dioxide. But scientists say if we really want to stop the Earth from heating up, and fast, we need to deal with methane. That's because methane traps way more heat over the short term. So let's compare how much heat a pound of carbon dioxide traps in 20 years to how much a pound of methane traps. Carbon dioxide, methane. Methane traps nearly 90 times more heat than CO2. But there is a silver lining. While CO2 stays in the air for hundreds of years, methane breaks up after only about 12 years. So experts say the quickest way to address climate change is to plug up methane emissions. And within a few years, the atmosphere will start opening up. More heat will escape. And relatively soon, about a decade later, the Earth will start to cool. And we should have fewer heat waves, wildfires, and catastrophic hurricanes. Today, we're looking at methane and why we need to control it, to protect both our planet and also the people who live in communities where drilling takes place. Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren has been following one scientist who's dedicating his career to finding big methane leaks.
Since he was a kid, Riley Duren was captivated by
space, the final frontier.
You know, I grew up watching Star Trek, and I was a classic, you know, sci-fi nerd. I was excited about space exploration, period.
And he never outgrew his excitement. Riley eventually became an engineer at NASA. He focused his work on looking for other planets that might be home to intelligent life.
I got this passion for exoplanets, the idea of finding planets like the Earth around other stars.
Our planet, on the other hand,
Earth was a place where you launched the spacecraft. It wasn't part of the exploration.
Then as climate change became a more urgent problem, it struck Riley that rather than looking for other habitable planets, maybe he should use his skills to keep this one habitable.
I had this epiphany that maybe I should look down some more and pay more attention to Earth science.
That new passion led him to methane. Riley wanted to figure out how to measure big methane leaks and pinpoint their sources. Not an easy task when you think about how oil and gas fields, not to mention pipelines, are spread out over large areas. And methane, it's invisible. So while the Trump administration was busy cutting back regulations on the oil and gas industry, Riley's team was quietly getting more federal dollars from NASA. And over the past several years, the science of tracking methane emissions has taken off. And so have Riley and his team. They flew scores of flights over several states to see how much methane pollution they could identify.
Move the threshold down to 700.
See a few detections, looks like on some of the well pads.
One of our team members developed some really clever software that can show you methane in real time. So as you're flying along, you see this moving map of the ground underneath the airplane as seen by the imaging spectrometer.
And when that instrument spots methane,
there's software that's showing red blobs, is the best way I can describe it, on the map where there are sources of methane.
The team flew back and forth patterns, almost like mowing a lawn, over landfills, pipelines, dairies, and oil and gas fields, places known for emitting methane.
And it's definitely exciting when you're flying over oil and gas fields because these are huge areas. There may be thousands of potential leak sources. And you'll fly along and you'll see nothing. And then all of a sudden you'll get to a part of the oil field where it's just, you know, plume, 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 plume. And sometimes you'll see a really big one and you'll hear somebody go, wow, look at that.
They discovered that as much as half of the methane pollution was coming from just a small number of what Riley calls super emitters. They're responsible for the big plumes or gushes of gas. This means you could get huge reductions in greenhouse gas emissions by targeting a small number of polluters. The California Air Resources Board is the state's clean air agency. Officials there were so impressed with Riley's methane tracking, they wanted to use it to try to get companies to quickly clean up methane leaks. Several, including Chevron, volunteered.
I think today we'll do McKittrick.
It's November 2020, and Riley's crew is heading to McKittrick, one of Chevron's oil fields in California's San Joaquin Valley, an area known for farming and energy production. Over 16 days, they spot an enormous amount of methane. When the team spies a big plume, they send the geographic coordinates to the state.
We would then turn around and give that to our industry partners, and they would go out the next day and see what they could find.
Jorn Herner heads the research division of the California Air Resources Board.
And it turns out, if you provide it to the operator and they can go out and inspect, then they will find something that they can fix.
In more than half of the cases, the companies stop the leaks. That's the kind of impact that makes the scientist in Jorn giddy.
It seems insanely exciting. I mean, that's just absolutely wonderful, right? I mean, as a researcher at the California Air Resources Board, you're trying to put in place research that actually has a real impact out there in the real world. So that was very, very satisfying.
Jorn has seen how powerful this data can be.
Well, I have every confidence that if we end up having this data on a regular basis, California will do what is needed to have the data acted on in the state of California. But I don't know what's going to happen in the rest of the world, in other countries, in other states, and you need to get them on board as well.
That means setting new rules for an influential industry that usually fights regulation at every turn. President Obama set modest requirements for companies to start hunting down methane leaks at new wells. But under the Trump administration,
we launched the most dramatic regulatory relief campaign in American history by far.
Those rules and others were gutted after heavy lobbying by energy companies. Congress is expected to restore Obama's rules, but they apply only to new wells. They don't affect hundreds of thousands of existing wells, which leak too. I wanted to talk to energy companies about methane monitoring, but even Chevron, which took part in California's methane trial, wouldn't agree to an interview. Neither would Exxon or other big companies. Only one company, Jonah Energy, was willing to talk. In fact, VP Paul Ulrich was eager.
We produce enough energy to power about 3.3 million homes on a daily basis or cook 1.4 billion eggs.
Jonah Energy drills in rural Wyoming, where for years the pollution levels violated federal air quality standards. So the state stepped in and required Jonah to use infrared cameras to find leaks four times a year. Paul's company decided to check monthly. This helped Jonah cut methane emissions and get certified as a low methane gas field. A private company checks to make sure that Jonah is minimizing what's released into the air.
We're reading the tea leaves. Consumers are continuing to demand cleaner energy resources.
And so are importers of U.S. natural gas. Last fall, a French company canceled a $7 billion deal to buy liquefied natural gas from Texas, reportedly because the field it would come from leaks too much methane. Now the U.S. company that lost the deal says it will source its natural gas from fields certified as low methane. Paul says energy companies should welcome monitoring.
So whether it's drone-based or airplane flyovers, sign us up.
Tracking methane leaks is turning into a business, with companies cropping up with new tools to spot the gas.
Oh, I can see the drone flying right through the plume right now. It's awesome.
Rachel Ward is an atmospheric scientist who works for a company called Scientific Aviation. With joystick controls, she flies a drone over an oil well site in the middle of a vast sandy landscape of drill sites and dirt roads. She's in the Permian Basin, a gigantic oil and gas field that straddles Texas and New Mexico.
So the drones are really good for getting really up close and personal to individual methane-emitting sources. Today we're looking at these flaring stacks, but there's all sorts of other things that might emit methane.
Oil companies use flares to burn off methane that they don't want to put into a pipeline. But if flares aren't working well, a lot of the methane goes straight into the atmosphere. Rachel's partner navigates the drone towards a 20-foot flame, blazing on top of a skinny metal stack. It's several stories tall.
Oh, wow. Oh, that flare just kicked up. Can you hear that? Wow.
At oil and gas fields scattered across the globe, other scientists working independently are looking for methane from tall towers, helicopters, and even from space.
All systems are go for the launch of the European Space Agency's latest satellite, Sentinel-5P.
In October 2017, the European Space Agency launched a satellite. Instruments on board measured methane pollution and found the Permian Basin, where Rachel was piloting her drone, was the leakiest oil and gas field they'd ever seen in the U.S. Nearly 4% of the gas was escaping into the air. Daniel Savala was on the team of scientists that published the research.
We have enough data to say that the Permian gas is significantly dirty. That we know. Using that gas would be contributing in a major way to speeding up global warming.
Daniel's a senior scientist with the Environmental Defense Fund, an advocacy group that's taken the lead on methane. One study he worked on shows how clean the industry can be. Scientists flew over clusters of gas equipment in the Netherlands and found very little methane leaking.
And it makes you wonder, right? If that's possible, why don't we see this replicated in all these other places?
The difference, Daniel said, is that the Netherlands has strict methane rules. So to drill there, companies like Shell have to use cleaner technology.
But the most important thing is it became very clear that no one needs to reinvent the wheel here. The technology is available and it's already being used.
And yet, methane concentrations in the atmosphere grew faster last year than at any other time since scientists started measuring.
I think it's a little bit frustrating and scary that we have this extremely limited time frame to do something about it. And all we see is that action is not happening as fast as it should be, right? And every new data point we collect, it sort of points that we should be acting even faster.
Daniel's group is building a new satellite that will be able to trace methane plumes more accurately. And so is NASA engineer Riley Duran, who figured out how to pinpoint methane polluters from airplanes. This spring, he started a nonprofit called Carbon Mapper, funded by big philanthropies. His partners include NASA, California, and a private satellite firm. Carbon Mapper plans to launch two satellites in 2023 and a whole fleet 2 years later. They'll find methane sources Riley would never be able to fly over in a plane.
And there are parts of the world where it's difficult to get to because of the logistics and or, you know, quite honestly, you don't have the permission, airspace permission to fly there. So satellites have the benefit of being able to see the whole planet.
Not to mention, satellites can observe the planet every day, which is important because methane plumes, even big ones, can come and go relatively quickly. But the way Riley sees it, scattered trials and research projects can only take you so far.
You have a patchwork quilt of people making measurements on site, using low-altitude drones, using aircraft overflights, testing the satellites that exist. The challenge is, the uncertainty is those are mostly uncoordinated. It's not like there's one government or one industry that's saying, hey, we're going to invest in all this, we're going to make it happen.
For Riley, making it happen means creating a comprehensive global methane monitoring system. The science is ready, but leaders around the world have to commit to it and come up with the money, which he estimates will run into the billions of dollars.
You know, my opinion is the governments haven't caught up. The government agencies are still, you know, getting their minds around the idea that this is a priority. To be honest, I think it's lack of ambition.
But Riley's trying to change that, too.
I now recognize Mr. Riley Duren for your testimony.
In May, Riley got to make his case at a congressional hearing. He showed a film from one of his flyovers.
If you can cue the movie, please.
It was a lot like what he described earlier in the story. As a NASA aircraft flies over oil and gas wells, you see dozens of multicolored plumes, methane leaks, that normally can't be seen with the human eye.
These super emitters are broadly distributed across the landscape, almost like invisible wildfires.
He asks Congress for help and leaves them with a warning.
Mr. Duren?
I just wanted to chime in quickly. What I would say is there is still time and an urgent need to act quickly. The window is closing. It is an all-hands-on-deck moment for not just the federal government, but all government branches, private sector, and civil society.
President Biden says addressing methane is urgent. I tried to get White House and EPA officials to talk about Riley's idea for an international methane monitoring system, but they wouldn't. The science for tracking methane leaks has come so far, so fast. Scientists like Riley Duren are offering world leaders a rare opportunity to do something that could help slow down climate change in a decade. The question is, will the leaders take them up on it?
The methane leaks that are heating up the atmosphere are also hitting much closer to home.
It makes me wonder, down the road, will some of our babies become sick or ill because of this?
Coming up next, when natural gas drilling is happening in your backyard, this is Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from Wondery's In God We Lust, a story of a sex scandal and a very public fall from grace. A hotel pool attendant in Miami meets a couple. What begins as an unconventional proposition will soon throw them all into the international spotlight because the couple is none other than Jerry Falwell Jr. and his wife Becky, two of the most powerful figures in evangelical America. Listen to In God We Lust on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Wondery, feel the story. We get support from FSAstore.com. If you have an FSA account, chances are you're not taking full advantage of it. So many everyday purchases are covered by your FSA, from prescription glasses to sun care, acne treatments, tampons and pads, and even new items like masks, hand sanitizing wipes, and so much more. Trusted by millions of Americans, FSAstore.com is the largest site with thousands of exclusively FSA-eligible products, guaranteed. Head to FSAstore.com and use the code REVEAL to get a one-time discount of $15 off your order of $150 or more. That's FSAstore.com, code REVEAL.
Hello, I'm Ike Sriskandaraja, a senior radio reporter and producer here at REVEAL. We're a nonprofit newsroom, and we rely on support from listeners like you. To become a member, text the word REVEAL to 474747. Standard data rates apply, and you can text STOP anytime. Again, text REVEAL to 474747. And thank you for supporting the show.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Michael Montgomery, sitting in for Al Letson. For most of us, natural gas drilling happens in some barren, faraway place. But millions of people across the country live with it every day. Arlington, Texas is one of those places.
I'd now like to call a meeting of the Arlington City Council to order.
Last summer, the City Council held a virtual meeting to discuss a French company's plans to drill new wells. People from the community logged on.
Hi, my name is Wanda Vincent. I am the owner and the director of the Mother's Heart Learning Center. Our clients are about 80% African American and about 20% Latino.
The company, Total, is one of the biggest natural gas producers in the world, and Wanda doesn't like what they're proposing.
To my understanding, they want to drill or fracture three new gas wells in our backyard. It's literally in the back of our playground.
Arlington and nearby communities have approved thousands of wells, and there are already wells near Wanda's daycare. When she looks past the playground, she sees several large storage tanks and a big pipe sticking out of the ground.
This company should have never been approved to be in the backyard of a children's learning center.
The past two decades have been a boom time for natural gas in the U.S. That's due in large part to fracking. Also a big push from the federal government, which saw fracking as key to America's energy independence. But it's come at a cost. We heard in the last story just how dangerous methane is for our planet. Methane and the other gases that come out of wells also pose dangers to people's health. Arlington has seen that up close. Here again is Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren.
Arlington sits on top of one of the country's biggest natural gas fields, the Barnett Shale. It's the birthplace of fracking. The city's part of the Dallas metro area. The Cowboys and Rangers play in Arlington. It's also home to about 400,000 people and hundreds of natural gas wells. They're everywhere, close to houses, shopping malls, schools, and daycares. Arlington's children have unwittingly become part of an experiment. What happens when gas wells and people intermix? It's something Wanda Vincent worried about at that council meeting.
It makes me wonder, down the road, will some of our babies become sick or ill because of this?
What Wanda's referring to are gases, some toxic, that can leak from the wells when they're first drilled and for as many years as the wells produce gas. There's the methane itself that contributes to smog, which harms people's health, and cancer-causing fumes like benzene and formaldehyde.
And my question would be, can this company guarantee me 100% that you're not putting any of us in harm's way, now or in the future?
Local, state, and federal officials haven't studied whether Arlington's wells cause health problems. Using state data, we found that more than half of Arlington's daycares are within half a mile of a well. And a lot of Arlington's kids have health problems. Childhood asthma rates in this part of Texas are way above the state and national averages. The rate of birth defects is the highest of any large county in Texas.
Thank you, Mr. Buskin. And as a reminder to the public...
Back at the council meeting, Total's representative, Kevin Strasser, defends his company.
There's no one better in the business. And we have been at this site for over 10 years now. I appreciate the residents around the site and particularly the school that's just to the north of us. I feel like we've cohabitated there for the last 10 years without any issues.
Council member Marvin Sutton is not convinced Total is doing all it can to keep the air clean.
Mr. Strasser, my question is, you said you would have noise monitors. Would you have air monitors as well on that site?
No, we don't do the air monitoring. We don't do that directly from our company. We rely on the TCEQ for that.
Okay.
TCEQ is the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. I checked, and they told me they don't monitor air pollution from individual drilling sites. Ranjana Bhandari also speaks at the meeting. She leads a small group of volunteer activists called Livable Arlington. When she learned about Total's plan for drilling, she went door-to-door in the neighborhood, alerting Wanda and others.
And we discovered that nobody
was aware of this. We did the job that Total should have done.
And tonight, she urges city leaders to reject the permit.
Otherwise, as fracking continues, we are going to see a lot more illness and disease, and we know who it affects. In that part of town, it affects our African-American brothers and sisters.
The science backs her up on this. According to the American Lung Association, Black children and children from low-income families are more likely to suffer from diseases such as asthma. They're also less likely to have health insurance. After about an hour and a half, the council is ready to decide on Total's wells.
I believe we'll need to do a roll call vote on this one.
Mayor Williams?
No.
Councilmember Sutton?
No.
The drilling is rejected 6-3. It's a stunning reversal for a city council that's okayed almost every drilling request for 15 years. Here's Councilmember Marvin Sutton.
It felt great, and so I was proud that I was able to advocate, but not only advocate, but to mitigate risks to our citizens and underserved community.
After years of defeats, Ranjana wanted to see the victory as a change of heart on drilling. But she worried the no vote was a temporary reaction to what was going on last summer. COVID-19 was disproportionately hitting people of color, and the nation was facing a reckoning on civil rights after George Floyd's killing.
The city council was very concerned with issues of racial equity. They had just passed a resolution vowing to work for racial equity in our city.
Even so, she half expected Total would fight back.
So I'm on tenterhooks, waiting to find out what mischief they're planning.
Ranjana had good reason to be dubious. For years, natural gas drilling has been nearly unstoppable. Starting in the early 2000s, fracking and natural gas were promoted as job creators, and they were also going to make us less dependent on energy from overseas. Drilling was a rallying cry for Republicans.
The chant is, drill, baby, drill.
And President Obama backed it, too.
We, it turns out, are the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. We've got a lot of it.
Natural gas was also going to help tackle climate change.
And by the way, natural gas burns cleaner than oil does. So it's also potentially good for our environment as we make this shift.
Gas companies pushed that message in ad campaigns.
We're ExxonMobil. And the cleaner burning natural gas we produce.
But producing this fuel pollutes the air and water, so companies lobbied heavily on Capitol Hill and convinced Congress to give them exemptions from environmental laws. Like the country as a whole, Arlington made a big bet on natural gas. So last summer, when the Arlington City Council rejected drilling near Mother's Heart Daycare, it seemed like the industry's special status was in jeopardy. But just weeks later, the city gave Total permission to drill and frack 7 wells close to 2 other daycares in Councilmember Sutton's district. This time, the approvals came without any public meeting or even a vote by the city council.
This particular site is the Rocking Horse site. Right next to it is a daycare called Child Care Network. And then you have Busy Kid right across the street. Which really concerns me because it's one of the most diverse districts in our city and even in our county.
Sutton knows his constituents, busy working families who don't have time to fight political battles. Like Alexis Richardson, who was picking up 3 kids from Busy Kids.
It doesn't make me feel good if they're going to be around something that's harmful, like so close. I didn't know it was across the street. If I knew more about it, it would probably be bothering me. But I didn't know anything about it at all.
Why would the city reject drilling near one daycare and then turn around and let the same company drill 7 wells near 2 other daycares?
I understand those who may say, well, they're exactly the same, aren't they? It's drilling and you've got daycares and all these other uses. But it's a different situation as far as we're concerned.
Richard Gertzen is Arlington's Assistant Director of Planning and Development. His office okayed the drilling at Rocking Horse, not the city council. The reason? The city council set it up that way. 8 years ago, the council approved what's called a drill zone there.
Once the council establishes that drill zone, as they did in 2013, then any future permit applications, if they are inside that drill zone, they may be approved administratively because the council has already determined that anything within that drilling zone is allowable.
Richard says may, but in practice, his office's default is to approve permits in drill zones.
So does that mean forever, no matter how many and for how long?
Currently under our ordinance, yes.
The only reason the Arlington City Council got a chance to vote on and reject the wells at that first daycare was that it wasn't in a drill zone. There's something else that really makes it hard for Richard to say no to gas companies.
The fact of the matter is, here in Texas, as far as the cities, our authority is very much restricted, very much limited. We cannot, here in Texas, ban a certain type of drilling.
Richard is referring to a 2015 state law, a ban on drilling bans that passed after another city, Denton, tried to outlaw fracking. Even most Democrats voted for the law. It prevents local governments from setting any restrictions that block gas companies from drilling or make it too expensive. 3 months after the city approved the wells at the Rocking Horse site, a drill rig was up and running. Companies are required to use electric-powered rigs. They're quieter and don't pollute the air. That's what Total was supposed to do anyhow. But Ranjana says that's not what happened.
So there was some machinery operating. There was this really tall rig and big plumes of black smoke rising up.
Ranjana sent a video of the rig to a city inspector who confirmed Total was using a diesel rig. She also shared the video with Marvin Sutton, a rare ally on the council. He demanded an explanation from Total.
They just said they couldn't find electric drill at the time and they thought it would be okay, which is willful violation of our ordinance.
The city ordered the company to switch to an electric rig, which for Ranjana wasn't good enough.
The bigger question is, should drilling really happen right next door to two preschools? And science tells us, public health research tells us, absolutely not.
More kids go to school near wells in Arlington than just about anywhere else in the U.S. Reveal found that in Arlington, more than 30,000 children go to school within half a mile of a well. 85% of these children are kids of color, and most come from low-income families. Total is based in France, where fracking is outlawed. And it offends Ranjana that the company is doing in her backyard what it can't do in its own. She compares what's happening in Arlington to what multinational companies have done in poor countries.
We have this ingrained sense that this couldn't happen in America, so we are willfully looking at it and choosing not to recognize it for what it is. This is ecocide, it's environmental harm. I mean, there are human rights violations. Somebody asked me the other day, why do I care? Don't we all consume oil? I'm standing in front of two preschools. Those little children have no voice in this.
And in the case of one daycare, they're just 359 feet away. Other parts of the country are starting to agree with Ranjana that wells and people should not be so close. In Colorado, the state commissioned a health assessment and decided that new wells should be at least 2,000 feet from buildings. We wanted to talk with Total about its drilling near schools and daycares in Arlington, but the company turned down requests for an interview. We did get to talk with Stephen Lindsay, VP of another company with gas wells in Arlington called GHA Barnett. It's a Chinese company. I asked him whether wells are too close to daycares in Arlington.
I'd be curious what you would think is half a mile too close, is a quarter mile too close, is 600 feet too close.
I would not have an issue if my daughter or my son was at a daycare or school that was, I'm going to say, within what the current ordinance standards are of a protected use of 600 feet.
You said 600 feet isn't too close. Is 359 feet and the playground even closer? Is that too close?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying is it too close, but yeah, I think as you get within 600 feet, the further away it is, absolutely the better.
Stephen used to be on the city council of a town next to Arlington, and he says gas brings benefits. In Arlington, royalties from drilling fund a $100 million foundation to support city projects. But a study by the University of North Texas found that people closest to wells see very little benefit from drilling. Still, Stephen says companies expect cities to stand by their agreements.
Insofar that you gave someone entitlement 10 years ago to do something, and now you change that, that puts that investment at risk. Unfortunately, we live in a litigious society, and people are quick to say, okay, well, we don't like it, so we're potentially going to, you know, threaten legal action.
It makes it hard for a city council to exercise its decision-making, right? And these wells keep producing for a long time.
I mean, you're right. It's a great observation, but it's the law.
That's exactly what Councilmember Sutton got tangled up in this year when he tried to increase the distance between daycares and drilling. He wanted to require 600 feet from a daycare's property line instead of its building. But Total intervened. It warned that Sutton's proposal would violate state laws. The council scaled back Sutton's proposal. The end result is that Total could drill more wells near other daycares. But Sutton wasn't done pushing. He ran for mayor and campaigned on the drilling issue.
How y'all doing today? I'm Marvin. I would love to have your support.
On a windy April day, Sutton is decked out in campaign swag. Even his mask is emblazoned with the words, Sutton for Mayor.
So hopefully you consider me, and can I count on your vote?
Yes.
Thank you so much. I certainly appreciate it.
But there's something on the horizon that could make it even harder to fight off drilling. Companies in Texas are betting big on the new frontier in natural gas, exporting it.
With Cheniere's Corpus Christi liquefaction plant up and running, Texas and the Coastal Bend are ready to enter the worldwide natural gas market.
Companies like Exxon, Shell, and Total are investing tens of billions of dollars in liquefied natural gas, or LNG, and they plan to ship it across the globe. It's going to be really hard to put this genie back in the bottle. And it's not clear if President Biden even wants to. In the same speech where he was announcing executive orders on climate change, he also said,
let me be clear, and I know this always comes up, we're not going to ban fracking.
So which is it going to be? Many scientists and environmentalists warn that fracking and LNG aren't compatible with protecting communities and fighting climate change. So far, the president hasn't spelled out how he plans to have it all.
That story from Reveal's Elizabeth Shogren. A few weeks ago, Marvin Sutton lost his bid for mayor, and he's no longer on the city council. But in Washington, the EPA announced it's working on new regulations for oil and gas. They would include older wells that haven't been controlled. The EPA is seeking public input, and Rajana Bhandari is scheduled to speak during an agency listening session. As important as it is to plug leaks from oil and gas drilling, that won't make the methane problem go away. That's because there's another serious source that scientists need to deal with.
There's so much methane, so they burp and they burp and they burp.
That story next on Reveal.
If you like what we do and you want to help, well, it's pretty simple. Just write us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's easy and only takes a few seconds. Just open the Apple Podcasts app on your phone, search for Reveal, then scroll down to where you see Write a Review. And there, tell them how much you love the host. Your review makes it easier for listeners to find us. And, well, it really does make a difference. And if you do it, you will get a personal thank you from me. Like, right now. Like, thank... Wait, not him. Not you. Yes, you. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Michael Montgomery, sitting in for Al Letson. The methane that's escaping into the atmosphere isn't just coming from oil and gas wells. Sometimes it's from landfills. And sometimes, yep, from livestock. Cows, sheep, and buffalo have a very specific digestive process. And methane is one unfortunate byproduct. Livestock alone account for more than 14% of all global greenhouse gas emissions. In California, where the beef and dairy industries are big, animals release more methane than energy companies. And just like with oil and gas, there's a whole group of scientists searching for ways to cut the amount of methane that escapes. Reporter Brett Simpson recently spent an afternoon with one of these scientists.
In Davis, California, if you drive past miles of green fields and take a right turn off of Dairy Road, you'll land at a lab that doesn't look anything like a lab. Low red barns, tractors moving piles of green alfalfa, scientists slogging through mud in jeans and rubber boots, and rows of cows.
So that's Bridget, that's Gertrude. Gertrude's one of my favorites. She's one of our older ones.
That's grad student Mallory Honan. She works for Dr. Ermias Kibrop. He's devoted 20 years to solving the methane problem. But as far as his kids are concerned...
My kids would say that, you know, I study cow poop. So, I guess it's funny for them.
But contrary to what we might have heard, methane isn't in the cow poop. Or in cow farts. Almost all the methane cows produce, 97%, comes out the front end, in burps. And for years, Ermias has tried to take the methane out of those burps by changing what cows eat. He and his grad students have tried feeding them everything. Lemongrass, garlic, citrus, coffee.
It's kind of normal to me that we feed these weird things to cows and see what happens.
What happens is the food works its way through the cows, they start belching, and the team measures the methane using...
A burp analyzer.
A burp analyzer.
That's okay. What I call it.
That burp analyzer, more officially called a green feed, is a metal box the size of a mini fridge. You pour in feed, and the cow sticks its head in to eat. Another grad student, Brianna Rogue, shows me how it works.
As the cow puts her head into the machine, it drops down alfalfa pellets, which the cows really enjoy. This machine is able to capture the gas that they're eructating and respirating.
Eructating is a fancy word for burping.
That is the sound of a dairy cow licking a mic.
And the closest I could get to recording a cow burp. Turns out they aren't that loud, but they have a big impact. The average cow burps 220 pounds of methane a year. In California alone, that's the same amount of greenhouse gas created by 2.5 million cars. Ermias had been running tests with the green feed for years, with little success. Then he heard about a scientist in Nova Scotia, Canada, named Rob Kinley. He tells me he was also obsessed with methane in cows.
There's so much methane, so they burp, and they burp, and they burp, and they can't stop. If they do, they'll bloat, and it can kill them.
Rob didn't work directly with livestock. He was doing experiments in test tubes and petri dishes to try to change the chemistry of a cow's stomach so it would create less methane. A few years ago, he got to know a local dairy farmer who'd been grazing some of his cows near the ocean, and they were eating seaweed.
And he was seeing a little bit better milk production from them. So he said those cattle were better behaved, easier to handle, and they had rip-roaring heats.
In other words, seaweed was putting cows in the mood to mate. But Rob wondered, could it help reduce methane too? So back in his lab, he ran a test.
When I first saw it, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I thought something had gone wrong. I went about checking instruments and checking gas vials and checking samples and redoing it.
Each time, the same result. When he added seaweed to the Petri dish, methane levels went down by more than 90%. But the question remained, would it work in a real cow? Back in California, when Ermias heard about Rob's findings, he decided to find out. But he was skeptical.
We didn't know if this works in real animals, because there are a number of additives that work okay in the lab but doesn't work in vivo. Like curry, for example, you know, if you put curry in a lab, you can see the reduction in methane. But if you give them to animals, they get adapted to it very quickly.
Still, he ran the test using seaweed from the coast of Australia. Brianna and Mallory show me what looks like dry, stringy, purple herbs.
And as you can tell, it gets pretty powdery as you grind it. So as we were batch mixing, it was just like
coating.
We were purple at the end of it, you know.
And you just taste like salt, like you just smell like the ocean, yeah.
Finally, after weeks of feeding this to cows, they ran the data.
We saw about a 67% reduction in methane, which is phenomenal. I mean,
the team was ecstatic. And after perfecting the formula, they've seen methane emissions go down by more than 80%. So an average cow could go from emitting 220 pounds of methane a year to just 44. It's one thing to get wild seaweed from Australia to a dozen cows in a lab. But there are 95 million cows in the U.S., about a billion in the world. That's a huge production and distribution challenge, and it's sparked an industry of seaweed entrepreneurs, including Joan Salwin.
I'm standing here in the seedling room where we've got shelves and shelves of vessels, each container holding about 6.5 gallons of water and seaweed. All the seaweed I'm looking at here is a beautiful cherry red, and it's all kind of bouncing around, almost dancing in the bubbling seawater.
Joan was so excited about this seaweed research that she started her own company, Blue Ocean Barns, and relocated from California to Hawaii to oversee their seaweed farm. She says everyone is asking her, what do seaweed-fed milk and beef taste like?
And the answer is the milk tastes like milk and the meat tastes like meat.
Joan says if that all seems too good to be true, maybe that's okay for once.
We, you know, really need to make major changes to our fossil fuel infrastructure, you know, to our transportation choices. But wouldn't it be wonderful if beef and dairy were not one of those things where we had to dictate that for climate reasons, we had to take something off the menu?
The future of the supplement is in the hands of the FDA, which is currently running safety tests. But Joan isn't too worried. People have been eating this particular variety of seaweed for thousands of years. So she's optimistic they'll get approval to start selling it to farmers and ranchers soon. But will they buy it?
Feed.
That's Tony Toso, president of the California Cattlemen's Association. He said he already feeds his cows tons of supplements, so he's not too worried about adding seaweed to the mix, especially if it helps California reach its goal of cutting livestock methane emissions by 40% in the next decade. So far, California is the only state to regulate animal methane. Tony's open to the change, as long as the additive meets certain conditions.
Guys are going to look at it. You know, is it economically feasible? Does it accomplish the goals that we're after?
The state and federal government already subsidize animal feed for both the meat and dairy industries. So Tony hopes they'll help with this, too. The farmers and ranchers are on board and production's underway. So does that mean a guilt-free burgers in our future? Not exactly. Methane isn't the only greenhouse gas emission from the meat and dairy industries. There's carbon dioxide from producing and transporting the feed, plus concerns about overgrazing and water. It takes more than 600 gallons of water to make one hamburger. And critics say it's just not practical to get seaweed into the bellies of all the world's cows. Today, there are plenty who think that society needs to make a serious shift away from eating meat, like the World Resources Institute, the UN Environment Program, and Bill Gates.
Cows alone account for about 6% of global emissions. Of all the categories, the one that has gone better is this work to make what's called artificial meat.
The meatless movement is becoming mainstream. Even Burger King isn't on the action.
The Impossible Whopper is now available nationwide. You too can go to...
Ermias Kebrab agrees that it can be helpful to cut back on meat, as long as you have other choices for getting enough protein. But he worries that some activists behind the meat-free message are missing something.
You know, when people say, you know, we shouldn't be eating animals for food, it's just they're not considering the whole of the world. I mean, most people in the world do not have access to nutritious food.
In places where food is scarce, animal products are still the most efficient sources of protein. So Ermias says, we can't take meat off the table.
So that's what really bothers me. What about the voices, the majority of the world? All this noise is coming from North America and Europe.
This is personal for Ermias. He grew up in East Africa, where malnutrition is a big problem. He believes it's possible to solve the climate crisis without taking away options for getting essential protein.
What we're doing here is to get people that food that they need in a way that does not harm the environment.
And that means thinking beyond seaweed for reducing methane, because it's still too complicated and costly to transport it to farmers in arid regions like East Africa. So Ermias and his grad students are back to work, testing a new substance they're calling rumen proof. Ermias hopes it will work in places where seaweed's not an option. What exactly is in rumen proof? Until the results come in, Ermias says, that's still top secret.
And for the seaweed project, some good news. Burger King and the supplement maker Blue Ocean Barns are working on a deal in which Burger King would pay premiums to ranchers who raise cows with seaweed. Brett Simpson reported that story. A recent United Nations report says slashing methane is the strongest tool we have for combating the climate crisis. It's an urgent call for quick, deep cuts in methane pollution. And it comes just as governments from across the globe are preparing for the next big summit on climate change this fall. Our lead producer for this week's show was Elizabeth Shogren. Taki Telenidis edited the show. Thanks to Mohamed El Alou for his data reporting on our first two stories, and to editors Sue O and Esther Kaplan, and to Malia Woolen from the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Amy Mostafa. Score and sound design by Jim Briggs and Fernando Aruda. They had help this week from Claire Mullen and Stephen Rascone. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Our interim CEO is Annie Schabel. Sumi Agarwal is our interim editor-in-chief. And our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camerado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Inasmuch Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Michael Montgomery, in for Al Letson, and as he likes to say, there is always more to the story.